Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. During each episode, we're diving headfirst into conversations with some of the most incredible RevOps leaders out there. Not CEOs, not big flashy executives, not vendors. We're talking to the people who are actually doing the work, the ones leading teams, the ones in the trenches, grinding it out every single day. We're taking things up a notch, getting deeper, having more fun, and as always, keeping it real. Remember our theme, RevOps Unboxed, and today we're unboxing it all. Let's get started. Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed, and I am so excited today I get to talk to Lindsay Prochnow. She is a RevOps extraordinaire. She's going to tell us a little bit about her journey today. Thank you so much for being here, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me, Sandy. I'm so excited to talk.
Awesome. Well, maybe we can kick it off. You can tell the listeners a little bit about your background and how you got into RevOps.
Yeah. So my RevOps career started in 2020 when I joined a IT software and services company as their third sales ops analyst. Within 6 months, I was one of two analysts. The director and the analyst had left. So I got a broad range of sales ops experience there, from incentive compensation management to sales enablement and reporting and analysis and supporting their partner team. I spent about 4 years there and then transitioned into a revenue ops role at a Series A startup, where I got to see more of marketing operations and work closely on developing an outbound sales function.
Wow, that's awesome. It sounds like you've really handled all different parts of the, you know, customer buying journey when you think of revenue operations. I mean, you started in accounting. So how did that happen? How did you make the shift from accounting and think of, you know, there's this sales ops thing? Like, how did that all happen?
Yeah. So I was working in public accounting for a couple of years at mostly a real estate investment trust client. And I wanted to transition into accounting in-house. So I found a biotech company in Chicago that I was very passionate about their mission. I joined as the first accounting and was doing month-end close, got a little bit of experience with financial forecasting, and because it was a startup, there were times where like the Salesforce account or contract wasn't set up correctly. So that was my first exposure to like a CRM. And from there, I expressed interest in working more in operations. I just knew that I liked more like I wanted a more strategic position, maybe something forward looking. So I joined the reimbursement operations team. So that was very specific to healthcare. And from there, I then applied for my first sales ops job, which was the role that I started in 2020.
That's awesome. It sounds like you're a problem solver, right? Somebody who really digs in and gets their hands dirty. And I'm just thinking as a RevOps leader, how awesome that is to have somebody with an accounting degree that can help with commissions. So I would imagine your education, your experience in having that background is definitely handy when it comes to sales operations, particularly like around the compensation side.
Definitely. Yeah. Like being able to work in the financial modeling on the finance team, and that really helped transition to build models for sales teams. I was very comfortable working with Excel from a young age. I can remember my first Excel class in college.
I don't hear a lot of people that say that. That's awesome. So I noticed your tagline on your LinkedIn is bringing spreadsheets back. I love that. I love that. I'm going to a Justin Timberlake concert tomorrow. So it's like bringing sexy back.
Yes, exactly.
So maybe you can dig into that a little bit. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so that is in reference to the last company I was working at. So Coefficient, they're bringing spreadsheets back. They are helping teams have easier access to data by putting all of the tech stack into Google Sheets or Excel. So yeah, check them out. It's definitely a great add-on to Google Sheets. They have a lot of pre-built dashboards for, I think it's perfect for like a sales ops or revenue ops team of one where you have very little support. As long as you can connect to your CRM or any of the data like sources that you need. It can give, yeah, executives easy access to live data.
Gotcha. Okay, I thought that was like your personal philosophy because I was like, mine is like get rid of the spreadsheets, get into your CRM, right? Single source of truth. Like the worst thing that I run into is like when a sales manager is running around with the spreadsheet and you're like, it's on the freaking dashboard I built. Why the hell do you have a spreadsheet? So,
Yes.
okay. All right. So
Yeah,
now
no,
that we're on the
I
same page.
yes. No. I will have to update my tagline because I can relate to you. There were so many times where like I would spend hours building a Tableau dashboard and then someone would come to me with a different report and they were like, this doesn't tie. And I was like, it's because you don't know all of the reasons why I built that report. You don't know what field to use. You have to do this thing in order to get to the right number. It's like you can't just take the CRM data face value, dump it into a spreadsheet. That's kind of why our team exists, right? That's why sales and revenue ops exist because we're able to translate what's in the CRM into like the actionable insights that the sales team needs. So I'm with you there. I want a single source of truth. Don't want different dashboards
So
and
how do you
spreadsheets.
approach that when you build out a Tableau dashboard where you're pulling in CRM data? I'm guessing, sometimes other data from different sources. You're building it for sales leaders. How do you go about that process, to make sure you've got something like that, you nail it?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like working with whoever's requesting the data, right? And treating them like a customer or a user, understanding the requirements. I think before that, it's like making sure you understand the data structure. So maybe working closely with the engineers, or in my case, it was just working with the previous sales ops analysts to ensure I knew what field meant what and where to find the data. But then, yeah, just working with whoever's requesting the data to understand their requirements. What is what is the goal of the dashboard? Is it to support your team and keep them focused on their objectives? Is it for a board meeting? That's kind of my process. And then from once I build the first draft, then it is usually a few iterations back and forth. Like, do you like this visual? Is it actually communicating the story that you want to tell? Yeah.
I love it. I love it. And you hit the nail on the head. What's your goal with creating this? What problem are you trying to solve? What are you trying to achieve? Is it for a board meeting? Is it to help motivate your people? Those are all great questions. So, as somebody sitting in your shoes, the RevOps person, analyst, the person who is serving their internal customers, I think it's important to ask that question because a lot of times people come to you and you'd be like, oh, actually, we already have this dashboard, or there's a quick report here in Salesforce. Do you want me to customize that for you? So asking those questions, I think, is important. And that's the difference between being, I think, the, quote unquote, admin versus somebody who's going to actually help advise you and help to support you in your business. So can you tell me a little bit more about your experience with that and how you kind of make that shift from being, support to more of like, proactive advisor type of role?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. And I feel like I went through that transition in my first sales ops role because I was new to me. So I'd often get questions like, can you do this? And I'd be like, yeah, like, sure, I can do it. Like, I'm capable of doing it. And then, you know, my colleagues were like, oh, we already have that. Like, you don't need to do that. And then, of course, working with the engineers, they were like, that doesn't always make sense to build something that this team wants today. Like, you need to consider how it will affect the like CRM, the ecosystem, like moving forward, like, is this a sustainable thing? So for an example is like, if a team requests a specific field, what's the purpose of that field? Do we have another field that exists that can support them? Will we need this in even like 6 months, a year from now? Or can we provide them with the data in a different way? So that's like what I think of when I think of being more of an advisor than just a like task manager. It's sometimes the requester doesn't always know the big picture. They just want to get an answer. They want to support their team, but you need to take a step back and think through, you need to know your team's overall mission. And yeah, all of the other teams that you're supporting, what their objectives are and what their needs are.
That's such a great point. And it's hard because especially if you're newer in your role, you're not as senior as the, you know, VP or whoever the leader is. And they're like, I need this thing now. I need to push this field in. I need this field for a board report tomorrow and blah, 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 blah. And that's how this stuff always comes in. So sometimes I would imagine it's hard, especially if you're, you know, not as senior as the person requesting it, to kind of take a step back and just ask the question, you know, well, what problem are you trying to solve, right? Like, how I can help you, but that may not be the solution. And I mean, that's just basic. And sales leaders forget it all the time, revenue leaders, because they're in the moment, right? They're trying to close a deal and they're stressed out and nothing else matters. And we got to get this thing done. And I'll tell you, when I took over the last role that I had, there were 266 properties on the deal record in HubSpot.
Wow.
I shit you not, 266. And we got it down to 66. And even of those, we isolated it to like 10 core fields per stage, but then like one require. Like we had to, like, it was just a transformation and hiding them from view. But like when I first went in there, I was like, I wouldn't know what to do if I was a salesperson, like pull it up. I'd be like, well, no wonder nobody's filling this stuff out. Cause like, what the hell do I do? You know?
Yeah. So, it's overload, too many. Yeah. It's like hard to focus your attention on what's most important.
Yeah. So if every sales manager that comes to you and says, oh, I need to add a field, does it? And you say, sure, no problem. Like, before you know it, you're going to have 266 properties and not know what the hell is doing.
That's incredible though. What a transformation. I love that.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was nuts. People were starting at stage four too. Like, there was no like sequential stages. It was really bad.
Gosh.
So we fixed all that. Yeah, it was crazy. But
yeah, I went through a similar analysis at my last company. I will say that we probably got it down from like 100 to like 80. There was like so many fields that like other teams were using. It was, yeah. They were needed, I feel like, for the most part. Marketing, engineering, product all had reasons to capture data. But we certainly cleaned up the page layout, so.
I'm just laughing because there were things like, this is a 2021 attendee of this, and they would add like a field for it. And then the same conference they went to in 2022, they would add a field for that. So it was just like, there was like stuff like that. It was really comical, but that's because people come with solutions, like you said, right? Like, we may have a dashboard for that. There's other ways to do that. There are campaigns that you can manage things like that, right? So having somebody with your experience to understand the use cases, the architecture, and then the reporting, I think is definitely critical. So just tell me a little bit about, I know you mentioned going into your first quote unquote RevOps role. You kind of came up from sales ops, so accounting to sales ops, and then RevOps, and you're building out a RevOps situation. Tell me about your observations, like the biggest difference from making the leap. Because I think this is a lot of people. And this is how I got started. I got into sales ops. I mean, RevOps wasn't a thing back then. I'm old. It was like in 2012 and it wasn't called that. But a lot of people go from sales ops to RevOps. And in some companies, it still means the same thing. They just named it differently.
Right.
In some companies, it's truly RevOps and you've got to support the full buying journey. So, tell me about your experience in making that transition and things that you've learned and just general thoughts.
Yeah, I think the one big takeaway that I would recommend to anyone like interested in transitioning into revenue ops, or even if they've never had a sales ops role and are interested in starting in sales ops, I would say invest in like learning and development. And listening to podcasts is great. Like definitely listen to this podcast, continue listening here, but also participate in community groups where you're like discussing topics. One thing that I did recently was join the Pavilion community. So Pavilion is like a group of go-to-market professionals from marketing, customer success, sales to operations. And they have a ton of on-demand courses about like cold calling, customer success management. They also have live trainings, like 8-week courses, where they're instructor-led 90-minute sessions. They give you actual templates, like forecasting templates or unit of economic templates. And then they provide you with like a cohort about 50 people that are also in that class, where you can like discuss the topic that was taught that week. So that's one place I would say to start. A lot of companies have a learning and development stipend, but whether or not they do, I think that's the best thing you can do for yourself is look outside of your company and learn more. Sometimes everyone at your company is just trying to do what the business needs, and they might miss out on like the foundational RevOps or sales ops thing. So that's one thing I learned. Another thing that I would recommend is ensuring that you know what kind of culture you want to get into. I mean, sales ops at a Series A or a seed company is so different than like a private company with 100 million ARR. So consider, like, do your research on what it means to be like the first hire, the only hire, or one of 10 based on your career goals. Where do you want to see yourself? Do you want to be doing a little bit of everything? Do you want to work closely with sales and help them develop their product market fit? Then, you know, go into a seed or a Series A company. If you want to focus on reporting and analytics or on the tech stack or get really, really good at Salesforce, then maybe join a much larger company where you could be a subject matter expert and have a team around you that all focuses on a different area of sales ops.
Yeah, these are two very valuable pieces of advice. I want to jump back first to the continuing education. I think you really bring up a great point. It's your responsibility as to where you want to take your career. Ideally, companies provide, some sort of reimbursement a lot of times, but sometimes they don't. And you know, you have to invest in yourself, and there's a lot of free resources out there. So HubSpot actually has some really great free courses. They have a revenue operations course that they put together, and I'm shouting it out because I did do like a little bit of a cameo on that. I did some of the segments. But that's a good one. That's free. And HubSpot's a, you know, credible company. There's other ones, you know, Communities, Revenue Operations Alliance, which is the sponsor of this podcast, has a community with some good resources, Pavilion. There's quite a few. Winning by Design is a great one as well. So it just depends on you. But, you know, even if you don't have a budget for it, there's lots of really cool free stuff out there, podcasts to listen to. Free certifications that you can kind of jump into, and it's really, you know, what you do with it. So kudos to you for being proactive about that, and because it is different. And I know you mentioned about, you know, this aspect of marketing operations, and that is definitely a different beast. So if you're going to a Series A startup and they're trying to develop the marketing engine, that's definitely an expertise that you're going to want to be proficient in. You know, how are you able to do lead automation and, you know, all the marketing ops metrics. So I think those are just really good takeaways from you, just in terms of how to handle everything. So any other comments on the, I'm blanking out. Any other comments around the continuing education side of things?
No, I think I would just echo what you said. There definitely are free resources out there. Winning by Design is another place that I looked. HubSpot Academy as well. Just be intentional. I think take a step back and think, what do you want to learn? Like, sometimes you can consume too much content and like, don't know if you're are you absorbing everything that you are reading? Be intentional with what you're looking for based on your goals.
Awesome. And then I think you dove a little bit into the role itself, and like what you know, if it is a Series A, and asking those questions, and what type of resources are you going to be having, and what really is the actual day-to-day job, right? So like, what are you trying to get into? You know, in those earlier stage startups, they can be super fun, but you don't have any backup. So you got to be able to do the admin yourself, run the reports, think up the comp plan, you know, kind of be scrappy and just figure stuff out. So that's what I always tell people. Like, if you can, it's like, there's the old saying, like, jack of all trades, but you have to be master of all, right? So it's not master of none. Like, you've got to be able to do it all and do it all well. Right. And I think that's a big difference when you're thinking about RevOps, because every company has a different focus, right? So it could be top of funnel. And so even though it's a RevOps hire, you might, you know, need somebody who's more focused in on marketing ops, right? Because that is the now, or building comp plans. You know, in the role that I just left, we had pretty decent marketing ops. We needed a full overhaul on the sales process. So I focused mostly in on the sales process and then the handoff process to implementations, because we had like a complicated build. So I was really focused on middle funnel and then just post-sale, like immediately post-sale. I wasn't focused, you know, on the, you know, kind of, if you think of the bow tie on either further end, I was focused more in the middle, right? So you have to really ask those questions, I think, when you're jumping into it.
Yeah, exactly. Because that will dictate, I mean, where your career takes you. If you focus on more of the post-sale versus top of the funnel.
So tell me a little bit about what you learned about marketing ops. So you did, you know, make that leap. You said you learned lead automation and things like that, outbound, inbound process. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about your experience there.
Yeah, so I think one thing that I didn't have m much experience with at my previous role was like ideal customer profile. It was a term that I heard marketing use once or twice, but I didn't really know what it meant. And so that was something that we were focusing on at the startup is identifying what that ideal customer profile is. So we had a couple years worth of sales, and so we dove into that to see, okay, what are the common themes here? What industries are we selling deals to? What titles are we selling deals to? What is the ARR of those companies? And using that data, we would then decide, okay, what inbound leads are, we didn't quite implement like an MQL yet, but that was where we were getting to is, what leads that are coming into the funnel through our inbound channels do we want to be able to send directly to the sales team to book a meeting to? And which ones aren't doing that well? Which ones aren't converting? And we're going to save the sales time to focus on those leads that we expect to convert. So it was, of course, optimizing like how the leads, or how the sales reps can communicate with those leads. So like integrating Apollo with the lead routing tool that we used so that we could send emails, like blanket emails, but like customized emails to those inbound leads, making sure that the leads were hitting the CRM. We were getting a Slack notification so that the time to lead was like within an hour. The rep was saying like, "Hey, we heard you reached out. You didn't end up you visited the scheduler, but you didn't book time. Let me know if you like would love to chat with you." And then yeah, setting up that exclusion criteria. And yeah, developing the ICP.
That's great.
I think it's like a work in progress. Like ICP will never be set, I think, at that early of a stage. So we were, but we were using that information to develop outbound cadences as well.
That's great. So you were able to really build it from the bottom up and understand the ICP and the process, which I think it's valuable in RevOps to really understand the business and who you're targeting. There's always that, like, well, I work on the business, but not in the business. So, having to dig in and develop an ICP is a really good exercise, I think, because it helps you learn, like, who you're really targeting. And I love that you set up that, I think you said like a 60-minute SLA basically with the salesperson. There's a lot of data to support that. Like, if they're not getting to it within the hour, like the chances of it converting to a meeting is like, nothing. Like it just dramatically drops. So that's super important. But that's great. That's great feedback because it's really, diving into it. I think you said you're a process person. So, understanding the process of how an ICP reaches out and communicates and who the best ICPs are has to be something probably fun for you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that comes from like that auditing experience where as an auditor, you're going through walkthroughs, understanding the processes. Are there any gaps in internal controls? So I think, yeah, that love for like process comes from that world of auditing. And I think that'll stay with me throughout my career. Always love to find the bottlenecks and suggest opportunities to improve.
I mean, that's such great advice, finding the bottlenecks. Anytime there's a bottleneck, there could be friction that could slow deals, lose leads, and ultimately delay or lose revenue, right? Which
Right.
is, I think, our job. So, looking for the bottlenecks, that's definitely great advice. Here from Lindsay. What I'd like to do as we close up here is maybe tell us a little bit about just, words of wisdom, things that you kind of live by, a good takeaway for people as we wrap up the show.
Yeah. One thing I think of in my first sales ops role, and that was the friction. You kind of spoke about friction and process, but I think friction in like teams, like sales ops at certain roles can play more of a compliance role, and it can, and which is necessary. You know, we need to make sure we have a contract signed. We need to make sure that people are filling out the fields they need to in Salesforce. But I think you shouldn't forget that you're also an advocate for the sales team. So making sure that you have a presence at meetings. One thing I did at that first role was set up like office hours for my team. So sales or any other teams could join those meetings if they had questions or concerns or wanted to run ideas by us. So that's what I want to leave with the audience is don't forget to be an advocate for the sales team, and don't forget to attend meetings, like make sure you have a seat at the table so that sales ops can be considered.
That is great advice. I just before we wrap, I want to dig in just a little bit. You just brought up office hours, and I love that. I do office hours. I do them on Fridays, and I just sit there if no one shows up, or I like antagonize them in the chat. I'm like, dude, I'm here. Like, if you can't complain, like, come on, let's just chat. And so tell me how you orchestrate office hours. Like, how often do you do them? What's the attendance? How's that work?
Yeah, so we were a global team, so I made sure that it was like mid-morning. I started with once a week. It was like mid-morning to accommodate the most of the world. I don't think APAC was included in that time zone. And there would be a like some days there'd be five people, and we might not be able to get to all the requests because it was about a 30-minute session. And then other days there would be no one, and it would just be like me, or like once the team grew, me and another analyst. But to start off with, I did have a Google form that they would fill out to communicate what it is that they wanted to talk about. So if I needed to do any prep, I could do that before the call so that we can guarantee that they would receive an answer within that office hours. As the team grew, we did offer different times, again, to just be more accommodating. So it ended up being same time on Mondays and Wednesdays.
I love it. I love it. That's a great tip, especially if you're making changes or you just have a lot of people. Even if you have a request system, like I, always have like a form fill request, but salespeople sometimes they don't have time to fill it out. It's like, look, if you show up, then we can knock your requests out, or even if you haven't put one in yet, we can try to get to it. Just get it done. So,
Exactly.
I think that's just great. I love hearing that you're doing it because I'm a big advocate for that because it really just shows them that you're being a partner. And quite frankly, if they can't figure out what to do in the CRM, I take it upon myself. Like, okay, I haven't done a good job building it, so they can figure it out. So I want to be available to help them. And then it also helps me go, okay, like if the same topic keeps coming up in office hours, then we probably need to fix some stuff on our end and make it a little bit easier for them. Or people will even come and be like, dude, did you know there's this loophole? And it's like, shit, I didn't know that was there. So I'll get that too, like in office hours, or just provide RevOps therapy too
Oh,
sometimes.
yes. Yeah, that should be my new tagline. It's like the workplace therapist.
Perfect. That is the perfect thing to end on. Lindsay, the workplace therapist, the RevOps therapist, the process master. I love having you on the show. I love this conversation. I wish you all the best in whatever new ventures that you find yourself taking. Definitely stay in touch, and thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It was so nice to chat.
Okay, everyone, this has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed. Appreciate everybody listening and tune in for more. This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. Until next time, keep unboxing.